You're listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast, a series of conversation with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center for Global Policy located in Beijing. I'm Wang Tao, a resident scholar at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, where I run a program on climate and energy issue. I'm standing in for Paul Hannay, and today I will be speaking about recent shifts in Chinese and U.S. climate and energy policy, as well as expectations for the upcoming UN Climate Summit to be held in New York in September. To discuss these important issues, I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Zhou Ji, Deputy Director of China's National Center for Climate Change Strategy and International Cooperation, and one of China's veteran climate change negotiators. Welcome to the China in the World podcast, Dr. Zhou. It's a pleasure to have you here today. June was an important month for energy and climate issues, both in the United States and China. I would first like to talk to you a bit about what these policy shifts mean, and then move into a broader discussion about the upcoming UN Climate Summit in September. On June 2nd, President Barack Obama announced that the US would restrict emissions from existing power plants, the single largest source of carbon pollution in the United States. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, has since proposed a set of guidelines found in the Clean Power Plan, which will cut carbon emissions from the power plants by 30% and would reduce the role of coal in generating electricity by 2030. Are these emissions cuts significant enough to signal other developed and developing countries to make formidable industry policies to tackle climate change? And do you think a 30% cut in the carbon emissions from the power sector is feasible?
I welcome President Obama's announcement on that, and also welcome EPA's guideline for the existing power plant to reduce, to control carbon emission. But I would also like to say this is something very quite natural in my mind, given the energy independence, energy revolution in the United States in recent years. And also, I believe, although this is absolutely a positive signal, but I do not believe 30% cut is a significant signal to other parties. I think we have higher expectations, but certainly, given the power sectors, this is very very good news. And given the shale gas, given the increase of the share of the non-coal fuel, I believe I do expect the U.S. can do more, but certainly power sector is not the only field for U.S. To set up a more ambitious targets. But anyway, this is a very positive signal, so, and I do believe that's very, very feasible.
Thank you. So you believe this is a positive signal, but you think U.S. could has the capacity to do more than that?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. At this sixth round of the U.S.-China Strategic and Economic Dialogue in mid-June, a series of agreements were announced, including technology transfer between China's Huanan Group and Washington-based Summit Power Group, to develop coal into a synthetic gas. Summit Power also agreed to share information and technologies that uses captured carbon to force oil out of the hard-to-tap wells. Is this type of cooperation unprecedented between the two countries, and what might this mean for industries more broadly?
I think they are meaningful and very helpful for enhancing the cooperation between the two nations. Again, with higher expectation and more ambitious expectation for the two nations cooperation, I believe they can do more. For example, in this stage, they work more on information exchange or capacity building or personnel exchange, etc., etc. But certainly, well, we say those are necessary and useful. So we should also look at some deeper cooperation, for example, some joint R&D actions or plan or schemes or joint investment. In that way, we can expect some new commercial model for technology cooperation. The two nations, I think they are very, very complementary in R&D, such kind of technology, among others.
And this technology is specifically about the coal to gas. And do you also expect that other sectors, for example?
Information technologies, in the view to instill to smart grid, and also vehicle car, as well as some other efficiency.
So emission standard of the vehicles?
Including standard or code development for efficiency improvement.
Thank you. Though China is exempted from the emission caps under the Kyoto Protocol, Xie Zhenhua, Vice Director of China's National Development and Reform Commission, has expressed his hope that China would announce an ambitious overall cap on emissions within the first or the second quarter of the next year. How important do you think this is to propel the international negotiations on climate change? And is this hope likely to be realized and how it will be implemented in China?
So here I would like to cite the wording from the negotiation process. So we use the wording intending the nationally determined contribution. So here I do not believe we are in the time to say ambitious overall cap something, because there are a lot of indicators or a spectrum of indicators or forms to define nationally determined contribution. So we are still in the stage to do studies, to provide for proposals to Chinese government, how, in which form, and to which degree we make the nationally determined contribution and part of the engagement in the negotiation process. But anyway, as Minister Xie said, we do plan to come up with the proposal to describe our intended nationally determined contribution in the first half of next year. I think it's very likely to realize Minister Xie's hope, although it's very challenging. As you know, we need to do a lot of work, including, for example, scenario studies or some quantitative analysis, given a lack of data, reliable data, etc., etc. And besides, I would like to invite audience to be aware of the fact. Within China, we have a very diversified judgment and opinion on in which form, to which degree China can make the nationally determined contribution. And besides, because this is a collective action all over the world as a matter of a multilateral process, I would say some interaction between parties, especially between developed and developing countries, can also play some role to determine the contribution within the UN conventions context. So that means if we can if we are sure some tangible and significant support in technology and finance from developed countries will be available, we can make more ambitious targets for contribution to mitigation and adaptation.
Thank you. So are you implying that there may not be an overall cap, but that will be an intended national determined contributions as a target to be announced by China by the first half of next year? And this, to your understanding, will be an ambitious target?
For the moment, I do not mean that. I mean, everything is possible. Mm. I just mean, for the moment, we have a spectrum of options there, including overall cap, including intensity as a relative indicator. And so we have different options there. So now what we have to do is to compare advantage and disadvantage in terms of feasibility, in terms of cost benefit, in terms of how to maximize the co-benefit, what's the most effective option for China and also for the whole world. So we are still in the stage for studies on that. But certainly, overall cap is one of our options. It is under our consideration.
Thank you. Despite these recent successes, progress in global climate negotiations has reached a stalemate over the past few years due to a deep split between the developed and developing countries in assuming responsibilities for emissions. However, this might be changing. German Chancellor Angela Merkel promised 750 million euros, which is about $1 billion, to the United Nations Green Climate Fund, designed to channel climate aid from industrialized countries to the developing nations. What kind of pressure does this pledge place on other developed countries? And how might this pledge influence developing countries to cooperate with industrialized nations on climate change policies? And do you expect the United States and China to join Germany in pledging aid to the UN Green Climate Fund?
First of all, I would like to say I welcome the Chancellor Merkel's announcement on the provision of the financial contribution to GCF, I mean Green Climate Fund. This is very good news, a good message. But I added to you the wording pressure on other developed countries. So I would say this should encourage other developed countries to take action as early as possible and as more as possible. But certainly, compared to the pledge made in Copenhagen and Cancun, 1 billion is still very small piece. But certainly, with the Chinese saying goes, a long march should start from the first step.
Yeah.
So I regard that as the first step. But certainly, I also see there will be a long way to go for developed countries to implement their commitment or pledge in Copenhagen. So as you may remember clearly, the pledge is by 2020, there should be 100 billion to be raised to support developing countries' actions for mitigation and adaptation. I do expect and encourage other developed countries to follow Germany's initiative and to design a very clear roadmap towards 2020 and to see how to implement, how to reach the pledge, the targets for financial support by 2020. I mean, 100 billion.
100 billion.
The question you read here, say,
do you expect
the United States and China to join Germany in pledging aid to the UNGCF. I should say this is not the right way to read the question, in my mind. Before I come back to this question, I would say within the UNFCCC context, financial contribution is only the commitment by developed countries according to the UNFCCC. So that means in this very specific context, the pledge on finance is only the business for developed countries. So it's not appropriate to put United States and China together here in this very specific, very important context. But I do expect the United States to join Germany in pledging aid to UNGCF. But certainly, to be honest, I think China is also under the consideration to take some appropriate measures to make some contribution. But this is something else. This is something else. Not necessarily within this context, not necessarily for GCF. I think the negotiation is ongoing for the contribution to GCF. But I would say it would be nice to see developed country to take lead and take earlier action or steps to operationalize GCF. For the moment, the mechanism is there, the body is there, but the substantial progress should be a financial flow into the GCF and flow out to developing countries as early as possible. So having said that, China had made some contributions in other contexts, like South-South cooperation.
So not in the GCF.
Not in the GCF. But that also depends on the progress made by developed countries as a first step, as a leading role to make GCF available. To make finance available from GCF. And then we can see what types of cooperation between developed and the developing countries to make GCF more effective and more efficient. I think that there should be some potential, but for the first step, as a precondition, without earlier and the leading roles for developed countries, it's too early to discuss China's role there. Anyway, within UNFCCC, China is in the position to get financial aid for mitigation of and adaptation to climate change.
Ahead of the UN Climate Conference later in Lima, Peru, the UN General Secretary Ban Ki-moon is going to host a UN Climate Summit this September with participations of many heads of states. Do you think this major event could influence and leverage a meaningful global agreement to combat climate change?
But certainly, I hope and also I expect this climate summit can be helpful to the ongoing negotiation process, for Durban platform negotiation. As you know, as a matter of schedule, this summit will take place in the upcoming September and around more than 1 year earlier than our schedule. Paris COP at the end of next year. I hope this summit, in this moment, this summit can deliver some positive messages, can deliver some political willingness to push and to support the negotiation towards a more ambitious target and action to enhance the implementation of UNFCCC.
What are the expectations for new climate deals to emerge from the climate conference in Paris by end of 2015? Are you optimistic that agreement will be reached then?
Oh, I should say, the expectation. So my expectation is the actions will be enhanced to implement the UNFCCC by the new deals, new climate deals. So I further expect the new climate deal will address not only mitigation but also adaptation, the technology, finance, and the transparency, as we agreed in Durban in 2010. And also, the nationally determined contribution should reflect the principles and the provisions of the UNFCCC. That means to continue to correctly define the role, the commitment, and the actions by either developed and developing countries to recognize different stage of development for the two groups of developed and developing countries, and also to pay adequate attention to the circumstances of developing countries. In developing countries, that means development or sustainable development will continue to be the prioritized strategic and the policy goals for them. I would also expect developed countries to continue to take lead. To set up and implement NAPS economy-wide absolute emission reduction targets. In that way, to demonstrate the possibility, the feasibility, and the trend of the whole world economies and energy. Towards low carbon trends. And in that way, developing countries can be encouraged by this kind of leading role from developed countries and also by their financial and technological aid. In the view to shift their development path from conventional development pathway to low carbon pathways. I think this is an interactive process from developed and to developing countries. But certainly, when we emphasize the importance of CBDR, common but differentiated responsibilities, on one hand, we continue to emphasize the leading role from developed countries. But meanwhile, on the other hand, this doesn't necessarily mean there will be inaction from developing countries. In contrast, there should be some enhanced actions from developing countries to transit into low carbon pathways. That means to achieve their developed goals with lower emissions and with stronger capacity to adapt to climate change. But certainly here, the key is international cooperation in technology and finance, especially in terms of the assistance from developed to developing countries will be very, very important, and especially in the context of globalization, because through FDI and also international trade, and with the very favored position in the global supply chain, developed country continue to dominate the world economy, and to have very strong influence not only within developed countries but also in developing countries. So that means without these kind of leading roles, it will be less optimistic for the whole world to transit to low carbon pathways. So I do have a lot of expectation for the Durban platform process. But to answer your final question, actually, I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, for that agreement, because I continue to see a lot of obstacles, the deadlocks there in the process of negotiation. I mean, to be very frankly, I do not believe developed countries for the moment had reflected adequate and encouraging willingness or attitude in making more ambitious commitment. So I do encourage them to be more ambitious, and then in that way we can expect a very strong interactive process and to reach the agreement in Paris next year.
Thank you very much for your frankness. I think this is the second time we reach this and gain up all the momentum and try to reach deadlines, reach a climate deal. So I think, as you described, this is very challenging and difficult, but I think this is also probably the last chance for us to reach an international deal on climate change. I think on that regard, both the developed country and developed countries will have to work very closely together to reach that goal. I thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today, Dr. Zhou. It has been a pleasure. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our website at www.carnegietsinghua.org and see the works of all our scholars and the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in next time.